Hi, everyone, and welcome to another edition of Dakota Digest. I'm Nate Weck, and thanks for joining me once again. Here's the top radio news of South Dakota Public Broadcasting for the week ending June 24th, 2016. A South Dakota candidate for the U.S. House of Representatives is calling on her opponent to convince Republicans in the State House to vote on expanding Medicaid. As SDPB's Lee Strubinger reports, Paula Hawk's call comes just 24 hours after South Dakota's governor called off a special session.
U.S. House candidate Paula Hawks says Medicaid expansion in South Dakota would help fund Indian Health Service operations. Hawks says Medicaid expansion helps anywhere from 15,000 to 19,000 Native Americans in the state. She says it generates almost $15 million in IHS funding. Hawks is running as the Democratic candidate against incumbent U.S. Representative Kristi Noem.
What I'm calling on Kristi to do at this time is to show leadership amongst the people she has influence over in South Dakota, which is the Republican Party and the leadership there, to talk to them and to lobby them to make this happen for South Dakota. Because while she is a federal representative of South Dakota, she still represents all of the people of South Dakota, and her influence could be the difference it takes to make this happen.
Hawks says House Republicans in the state should listen to the governor, who supports expanding Medicaid. The Democrat from Hartford says the reason the IHS system is broken is because the government never fully funded the program.
You can't attract the best candidates for working in your medical system. You can't buy the best equipment. And in some cases, you can't maintain it or hire other staff. And so while I think that throwing money at it is not the entire answer, I do think that until we fully fund our treaty obligations for Indian health care, we can't really talk about reforming.
Incumbent Kristi Noem says she agrees that IHS is underfunded, but says money alone won't fix problems within the institution.
This weekend, ham radio operators are celebrating the National Park Service. Amateur Radio Field Day features science and national parks. SDPB's Gary Ellenbolt has the story.
Amateur or ham radio operators started the Amateur Radio Field Day in 1933. The annual public exercise shows operators' skills. Corey Klumper is with the Unreal Radio Club in Marshall, Minnesota. He says most field days are hosted by local clubs.
The large field day operations are usually put together by amateur radio clubs. Even small towns usually have a group of hams, usually 5, 10, 15 people that get together and talk about radio. It's a great way to get into the hobby is to join one of those clubs. And they put on the big event where they go out to the park and put up a lot of antennas.
This year, ham radio enthusiasts like Klumper are helping the Park Service celebrate its centennial. The event hopes to connect people with operators in national parks for virtual audio tours.
The National Park Service agreed, thought it was a good idea, and they put some publicity together. And now the Amateur Radio Relay League has a website where you can collect activator points or chaser points for how many parks you can contact or how many parks you can activate for field day. Because why not? You've got two different events happening at the same time. Why not use them both?
Klumper says his club is coming down to host a field day in Vermilion.
Lakota youth are taking part in the 500-mile Sacred Hoop Run around the Black Hills this week. The annual event aims to reconnect the youth with their culture, land, and history. SDPB's Jim Kent caught up with the runners on a windy road in Wyoming and filed this report.
After camping at Bear Butte on Father's Day, 60 runners began their six-day journey around the Black Hills via Box Elder, Scenic, and through the Pine Ridge Reservation. The group stayed overnight at Fort Robinson, Nebraska, before continuing on toward Lusk, Wyoming, and then across the state to Devil's Tower. Ricky Graygrass is the event coordinator.
Sacred Hoop started when a group of individuals came together to protect and preserve the Black Hills and keep awareness alive on the treaty with the United States government on our timber rights, our water rights, our mineral rights, and just the treaty overall.
Graygrass says over the years, the Sacred Hoop Run has evolved into a way to educate Lakota youth about their history and traditions and to help combat drug and alcohol abuse.
The youth that are running for their families. Majority of the youth that come on the run are from broken homes, affected by alcohol, drugs, meth, inhalants, pills, whatever. And so they come and pray for their families, for a better family, for mom and dad to be sober, to have their grandma and grandpa stick around a little bit longer.
17-year-old Cheyenne has been part of the Sacred Hoop Run since she was 9.
We're not just running just to run. We're just running for a purpose, to keep the alcoholism, meth, and all the drugs off our reservations.
Ricky Graygrass says running in the recent heat has been a struggle, but the adult chaperones are keeping the runners well hydrated, and they're doing fine. The Sacred Hoop Run ends on Saturday at Bear Butte with a prayer for all those who took part and for the Lakota people.
Governor Dennis Dugard has proclaimed Monday, June 27th, as Post-Traumatic Stress Injury Awareness Day. He wants South Dakota residents to consider causes and treatments of injuries and conditions that come after stressful events. SDPB's Gary Ellenbolt reports.
Post-traumatic stress injuries are more commonly known as post-traumatic stress disorders. While such conditions can happen to anyone who has gone through a difficult period, Veterans Administration psychologist Dr. Kyle Lithgow says many military members have trouble asking for outside help, even if they really need it.
They're really trained to try to push away any of the limitations that come and continue on and complete the mission. And so give up on something or to relinquish that control to somebody else to handle is kind of counter to the culture.
Lithgow says anyone who has suffered severe emotional trauma should monitor themselves for up to 90 days afterward.
With time, if that kind of, they start thinking about it less, they get back to driving, they end up, that just dissipates. If that happens and continues to be that intense for after that 30 to 90 days, then is when probably getting some help from somebody is going to be certainly help them to not have that go into a very long chronic condition.
Lithgow adds those who get help with post-traumatic stress injuries have about a 50 to 80% recovery rate.
The Rapid City Chamber of Commerce met Thursday morning to reveal a new initiative to promote racial equality in the workplace. It's a pledge which in English translates to, "We are all related," and it comes after a year-long process of identifying social issues in the city. SDPB's Kenzie Wagner has more.
The pledge to end discrimination in Rapid City businesses came after the chamber was approached by Community Conversations, an organization formed to address racial inequality. Bill May is the chairman for the Rapid City Chamber of Commerce. He says the chamber encourages all businesses in the area to post the Equal Treatment Pledge and follow through with its promise.
So we're trying to be an active and helpful participant in making Rapid City more inclusive, in making sure that the native population of Lakota primarily are welcome in all businesses and that they feel that they are a big part of this community, because they are.
Some think the pledge will also benefit South Dakota's economy. Emma Minks is a member of Community Conversations. She says many of the surrounding tribal communities come to Rapid City to shop. She adds that this equal rights pledge helps South Dakota's tourism industry.
It will help with people who are coming from out of state, but also people who are traveling into Rapid from all parts of the state, from reservations, from, you know, the east side of the state. It just shows that, you know, Rapid City is really dedicated to making our community more safe and welcoming.
Chamber officials say the pledge is just one step to improving overall race relations in the city. They hope to continue the initiative by educating businesses about cultural and historical issues significant to the Lakota people.
Some researchers say the West River economy could be headed for trouble. As SDPB's Levi Gutz reports, an economist is sharing his thoughts at an upcoming talk in Rapid City.
Dr. Jake Mortensen is a Fort Pierre native and recently earned his economics doctorate from Georgetown University. He is providing an economic outlook as a Black Hills Knowledge Network consultant. Mortensen says West River is facing several economic headwinds: decreasing coal production and oil drilling in surrounding states, and grain prices could all have negative impacts on the region. Mortensen says despite these things, the area is still stable.
There's a lot of interesting stuff going on in the Black Hills, such as with the Sanford Mine, and agriculture is something that's never going to go away. People might run their cars on something other than oil. People might heat their homes with something other than coal-powered electricity, but they're always going to need to eat. And so that's something that we do very well, and I don't think it's something that's going to go away.
Mortensen says he's looking forward to the event and speaking with community leaders.
Snapchat is coming to the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally again this year. The social media app is a messaging platform that lets users send time-sensitive photos and videos to one another. It's mostly used by millennials, but the Sturgis Rally is mostly attended by baby boomers. SDPB's Kenzie Wagner reports.
Officials say last year's Snapchat focus on the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally racked up millions of views nationwide. This year, Snapchat coverage at the rally is going global. This is good news for Andy Young of the Home Slice Group. Young says he's aware the rally doesn't attract millennials. He says it's mostly attended by older people, but he hopes Snapchat can change this.
Reaching out to millennials is huge, not just for the rally, but really for any brand nationwide. They're trying to figure out where to reach millennials because people aren't necessarily watching TV the way they used to or subscribing to like traditional media. And that's kind of where Snapchat came in.
This makes sense to Brandon Nutting. He's assistant professor of advertising and public relations at University of Nebraska-Lincoln. He calls the Sturgis Rally's use of Snapchat a strategic move.
So by bringing attention to the fact that something like this exists, you have millennials who maybe are buying their first Harley. If you look at the types of motorcycles that people ride out on the rally, they're not sport bikes, they're cruisers, right? And so you have the younger generation who's just starting to buy those. They're finishing college, they're thinking, I want a motorcycle, and so you're doing the long game thought. Now they're aware that this massive rally exists, and so they'll start making their way there.
He says younger generations are the first to jump on a new technology, but over time, older populations start to become aware of and use it. That's the case for Snapchat. It's seeing an increase in baby boomer users. The Snapchat coverage of the Sturgis Motorcycle Rally goes live on August 7th. Young says the content featured on Snapchat will not only include Sturgis, but the entire Black Hills region.
Emerald ash borers have been discovered within 100 miles of South Dakota, and a state forestry expert says it's a matter of time before the beetles make their way into the state. But as SDPB's Gary Ellenbolt reports, the experts say this is not the time to start preparing for the borers.
The Omaha area is currently going through an infestation of emerald ash borers. The insects are making their way north and approaching the South Dakota border. SDSU forestry professor John Ball says it may not be long before the first beetle reaches the state.
About an hour and a half. And I say that because the infestation that's been found in Nebraska is around the Omaha area. And, of course, since the initial find, they found a few others, but still within the general vicinity. The beetle doesn't travel necessarily just on its own. Its transport between communities is via trucks and cars through firewood. So when I say an hour and a half, that's about how long it's going to take to drive 100 miles from the infestation of Nebraska to the South Dakota border.
Ball says there are remedies available to combat emerald ash borers, but he says being proactive is not the answer yet.
The problem with going out and injecting your trees now or putting pesticides in the soil now is that there is a very, very, very high probability your tree doesn't have the infestation, nor is there an infestation nearby. So you're subjecting your tree to some injury with injections that it doesn't need to be yet, or you're putting chemicals in the soil which aren't really doing any good and are certainly causing little harm.
According to Ball, one of the first signs of infestation is an increase in woodpecker activity, since the beetles are a favorite snack of those birds. He says if someone notices more woodpeckers or sees an ash tree or log with a small D shape on it, his office would like to know.
And that's going to do it for this week's edition of Dakota Digest. If you're looking for more radio news stories or additional programming of South Dakota Public Broadcasting, just visit us online at sdpb.org. Also, be sure to stay connected with day-to-day information by liking South Dakota Public Broadcasting on Facebook and by following our Twitter accounts. Our handles are at SODACPB, at SDPBNews, at SDPBSports, and at SDPB. For South Dakota Public Broadcasting, I am Nate Weck. Have a great weekend, everyone.